Oyez, oyez, oyez. All persons having business before the Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the Court is now sitting. God save the United States and its Honorable Court. Be seated. Case number 09-1792, District of Columbia v. TKAI Jibungu and Law Offices of TKAI Jibungu, LLC, Appellants. Mr. Al-Wal Ajay for the Appellants, Mr. Shiverly for the Appellants.
May it please the Court, Jude Iwanage, on behalf of the appellant, Chike Ijabong, and the Law Office of Chike Ijabong. As more fully enumerated in the brief filed by appellant, this case, by way of background, stems from a hearing officer's decision that dismissed the parent's claim as moot because, based on the hearing officer's finding that DC had offered at least part of the relief that was requested in the due process complaint. The complaint was eventually dismissed, and DC subsequently sought to receive attorney's fees for the work they performed at the due process hearing before the district court. Summary judgment motions were filed, and the district court agreed with the District of Columbia that they are prevailing parties, and as a result, awarded attorney's fees against the appellant. And it's from that decision that appellant, Chike Ijabong and the Law Office of Chike Ijabong, appealed this decision. This case is factually analogous to District of Columbia versus Strauss that was decided by this same court. The issue was about muteness, whereby the hearing officer dismissed the case as mute and dismissed it with prejudice, and then went ahead to include additional things as part of the holding, like finding that there was no denial of FAPE, and then also finding that the child was not, there was no educational harm to the child. But that issue was not before the hearing officer, because as evidence from the hearing records and the records of this case, the hearing officer said that the only issue before him was whether, just like in the Strauss case, the DC performed the evaluations.
He said that, but he didn't treat the case as if that was the only issue before him, did he? I mean, he went on to make some findings and conclusions.
Well, he made some findings and conclusions, but the findings and conclusions that he made in reading the hearing officer's decision, more or less usurped the province of the MDT. The MDT made recommendations for those evaluations to be conducted. There was nothing before the hearing officer.
Do you agree that these other findings and conclusions go to the merits, though? I mean, if we didn't have the mootness issue, these would be merits determinations, right?
Well, they could be if there were issues.
I'm giving you a setting. I'm imagining a case where put the mootness issue to one side, and he made these sorts of rulings. These are merits rulings, right?
Well, they are merits rulings. If you say there's no denial of FAPE, and if you say that the child has not been denied any kind of that there's no educational harm to the child. That's what they stem to be, but when you look at the totality of the circumstances of the hearing, that issue was not, because he actually said that the issue before him was just the issue about whether the evaluation.
You're saying there's no evidence put on regarding those
issues? There was no evidence specific to those issues before him, in as much as there was testimony from different people regarding different things, but they all went towards the evaluation, and that was why he concluded at the end that there was no finding by him that DC was even notified or was aware that they were required to do anything. But then it's imputed to DC, because as the agency who's responsible for caring for the children and providing them the educational services, when an LEA like this school was acting on their behalf, they are still responsible to do what was required to do, because the notice is on them and they are required to do, as more fully stated in my brief. So there was nothing before the hearing officer for the hearing officer to go ahead and take that extra step to say that there was no educational harm, neither was there a denial of FAPE, because those issues were not before him, since he said that, you know, that they were not, pretty much. And then also to go on the issue of whether he continued to litigate, because there are two parts of the case, whether they were prevailing parties and whether he continued to litigate. There were other issues that were presented in the due process hearing before they got to the hearing. At the hearing, he limited it. And by limiting it on that particular day of the hearing, that does not take away the right of the appellant to be present at the hearing, because there were 17 separate reliefs that were requested in the due process complaint. When they got to the hearing, he said the only thing before him was the issue about the valuation. So by limiting it at the hearing does not take away the fact that the appellant were supposed to be there on that day, because they were coming to the hearing believing that they were coming to discuss all the other issues that were raised in the due process complaint. But at the hearing officer decided to reduce it to just one issue before him. So it's inconceivable to say that preparing for trial and getting to trial and then the judge making a ruling and determining on the day of the hearing that this is the only issue I'm going to decide today makes the person's appearance on that day or continuation of the litigation unreasonable. I mean, it more or less defies logic, because you're there on the day prepared for trial and then you're told, I cannot deal with this issue, but only this issue. So it was not unreasonable for him to be present on that day and ready to go forward to litigate the other issues that were raised in the due process complaint. And besides, the letter that the district court says more or less muted the issue was a settlement letter by all standards, because where it's under the settlement provisions of the IDEA, and the letter was meant to provide certain relief. They only addressed one issue, which was the issue about go and conduct the evaluation on your own, pay for it, come back, we'll reimburse you. There were other issues that were raised that were not addressed by the letter. At the time that the letter, the evaluation was not conducted, it was already denied. At the time they went forward with the pre-hearing, DC was put on notice, and they knew at the point that nothing was performed and that they were going forward with the hearing, because the letter did not address all the issues that were raised by the due process complaint. Additionally, there is no form of res judicata effect, as the court recognized in the Strauss case, because what DC sought to offer, there was nothing that they benefited, because they had already offered to conduct the, if we go by the, at least the district court's position, that the only issue and the hearing officer's position that the only issue before the court was the evaluation. DC had already offered to perform the evaluation. So if that was already offered, then there is nothing that they benefited from the dismissal of the case. And as a result, there's no res judicata effect that applies to the case. And as the court ruled in the Strauss case, which I say again is factually analogous, because it's from the same hearing officer, and then also the decisions from the two hearings more or less mirror themselves. The language in terms of what was found and the final decision all show that the decision more or less bordered on things that were not before the hearing officer. For example, whether there was educational harm to the child was not an issue that was litigated by either the District of Columbia or by Mr. Ijabong. It was more into whether the evaluation was performed, whether the parent was notified, and what they did in terms of whether they rejected it, whether they went forward with it.
Counselor, you're into your rebuttal time. You're using your rebuttal time.
Okay. I reserve.
Good morning, and may it please the court, Carl Schifferle for the District of Columbia. The district court correctly found that the district satisfied two requirements for a fee award. First, DC Public Schools was a prevailing party in the administrative litigation, having obtained a favorable decision that not only addressed the merits, but also had res judicata effect. Second, the district court also correctly determined that the parent's attorney had continued the litigation without foundation and unreasonably, and in fact he did so simply to collect attorney's fees, to which he was plainly not entitled.
How is this different than Strauss? Why isn't your opposing counsel right that Strauss makes this a pretty easy case?
Strauss is fundamentally distinguishable in several respects, Your Honor. First, there was the counterfactual subjunctive in the hearing officer's decision.
That discussion began with the phrase, moreover, after Judge Tatel made it clear that in the discussion of the counterfactual subjective, that it was sufficient that the court had, that the hearing officer had decided that this was the, that the only issue before him had been resolved, and that this case was resolved on mootness grounds. That's all dicta. The moreover is dicta.
I disagree with that. I think it was a fundamental part of the court's reasoning in reaching its determination.
But in Strauss, the court, that the officer said, just as he did here, identified the only issue before him, the only issue.
And yes, I'll continue. Yes, yeah. Right. In this particular case, though, we have an explicit demand for compensatory education. That was not present in Strauss. So when the issue is identified by the hearing officer, because it's the only issue raised by the parent's attorney at the hearing, is the DCPS's alleged failure to conduct the evaluation, there is an additional component to that, which is the claim for compensatory education for having failed to conduct that evaluation. That claim was not present in Strauss. It is present here, and as this court held in Lezesny.
But there were lots of claims for relief present in Strauss as well, and it went off on the single issue of mootness.
But yes, Your Honor, I am distinguishing in particular here, we have a claim for compensatory education in this case, which was not present in Strauss. And as this court held in Lezesny, a claim for compensatory education forestalls mootness. Under Lezesny, I think it is clear that there was an ongoing controversy because of this claim for compensatory education. It was raised in the complaint. The district answered the complaint by saying the claim for compensatory education should be denied. At the hearing, the school's attorney pointed out that there's no evidence of the supporting a claim for compensatory education, that the claim for compensatory education should be denied. And so, as this court held in Lezesny, that is separate and apart from any, even if other aspects of the case are moot, the claim for compensatory education forestalls mootness. In addition, I would point out.
My recollection, counsel, is that there was such a claim in Strauss.
Your Honor, my recollection is that, although I don't think this was discussed in the court's opinion, that the complaint, the administrative complaint in Strauss, reserved the issue of compensatory education. I believe reserve is a quote. That was the exact word that was used in the administrative complaint in Strauss. Here we don't have that sort of potential ambiguity. We have a clear and explicit demand for compensatory education in the administrative complaint. And the hearing officer's decision addressed the merits of that particular claim for compensatory education by finding, for example, no educational harm, and that would be a necessary prerequisite to an award of compensatory education. So the merits were clearly reached in this particular case. In addition, again, to further distinguish Strauss, we have res judicata effect here. And Strauss recognized that res judicata effect does confer prevailing party status. It didn't find any res judicata effect of the administrative decision in Strauss. But here, as I said, we have a dismissal with prejudice of a complaint that raises a claim for compensatory education. And so that dismissal with prejudice, with such a claim in the case, has res judicata effect because the parent can no longer come back in the future, raise the same claim, again, demand compensatory education for this alleged failure to conduct this particular evaluation.
We have the same hearing officer, right, making the same judgment that the reciting that the case is moot, and then going on with virtually the same three paragraphs in somewhat changed order, commenting on the merits of the matter, which would not have been an uncommon practice in this court before the Supreme Court told us that if it's moot, not to go on. Or not to say that, well, that's a difficult issue, so we'll deal with the merits issue instead. The hearing officer isn't subject to that constraint, so it's just prudent, perhaps, for him to give a view on the merits in case he's wrong about being moot. But if it's moot, it's moot.
I guess I have to agree. If it's moot, it's moot. But just because the hearing officer says it's moot doesn't make it moot. For example, when Jepson...
He says there's one issue, and it's moot, right?
I think it depends on the context, Your Honor. I don't think it's quite put exactly that way. I mean, the court, the hearing officer does begin by saying the only issue before the hearing officer is the alleged failure to conduct the evaluations that were ordered by the multidisciplinary team. Now, as I said in response to Judge Griffiths, that issue would include the claim of compensatory education because the compensatory education would follow from the failure to conduct the evaluations.
Isn't it relevant here that no one appealed the hearing officer's decision?
That is relevant.
You're telling us something else was at stake, but no one else seemed to care about it.
Well, for whatever reason, the parents' attorney failed to appeal, and as a result of that, we have a final decision. The parent can't, or the attorney cannot, come back now and say, "Well, actually, the hearing officer was wrong in finding no educational harm. The hearing officer was wrong in finding no violation of the IDEA." That finality through the failure to appeal
precludes. But it's still open to say if it's and show if it can, that the hearing officer was simply amusing himself. Right. This was all. But this was dicta on the merits.
Well, that I suppose would be the chance that the parent's attorney takes by failing to appeal. If he thinks that it is truly moot in every respect, and he's right about that, well then Strauss would obviously provide him some comfort. But it's our position, as I indicated here, that this is not a dismissal based purely on mootness. It cannot be because of the claim for compensatory education, because of the res judicata effect of the decision. The hearing officer dismissed the complaint with prejudice, and with prejudice means something. It is my understanding of the word.
You said in Strauss that the res judicata effect sometimes means something and sometimes doesn't, because there's nothing more one could get anyway.
That's correct, Your Honor. As I said, just because the court or the hearing officer dismissed it as moot doesn't necessarily mean it's truly dismissed based on mootness. For example, in Jepson, the district court dismissed the complaint based on mootness, and this court said, well, it wasn't really based on mootness. It was also based on a merits determination as well.
Are the orders of the hearing officers self-enforcing?
Yes. In this particular case, of course, there was no relief that was ordered. But yes, as it would be an administrative determination that would be binding. And so that's what
we have two models, or more, maybe even more. The National Labor Relations Board, for example, may issue an order in an unfair labor practice case, but it's unless a court enforces it, nobody has to comply with it.
I don't think that's the case here. In fact, the statute, the IDEA, provides that if the administrative order is not appealed, it becomes final. And so that finality has a legal effect.
It raises interesting questions which Strauss doesn't discuss. I mean, Buchanan deals with prevailing party in a judicial proceeding. We're dealing with prevailing party in an administrative proceeding. And if the administrative proceeding is not bound by, as Judge Ginsburg said, is not bound by conceptions of mootness, Article 3, and it's not, then the translation is not exactly, it's not exactly the same fit in terms of what a prevailing party is in an administrative proceeding as opposed to a judicial proceeding.
That is true, Your Honor, but under this framework of the IDEA, a parent who's prevailing party below, who receives a favorable administrative decision, is considered a prevailing party.
What I'm suggesting to you, though, is that if a hearing officer says, well, this case is moot, but nevertheless, here's my view on the merits, right? It's not clear to me why that should not render the district, and assuming the district wins, in both, prevailing party. It wouldn't in a judicial proceeding, but this isn't a judicial proceeding.
And I will certainly agree with that point, Your Honor. And in fact, we have here even a stronger merits-based ruling determination by the hearing officer in this case than we did in Strauss. And for the reasons, as I indicated, not just the merits-based determinations, but also the res judicata effect of the decision. Either of those independently would establish the district as a prevailing party. And in addition, there is the res judicata effect of this additional claim that was raised in the administrative complaint, that claim being that appropriate triennial evaluation had not been conducted. That's separate from the evaluation we've been talking about before. Raised in the complaint, it wasn't pursued at the hearing, but again, you have a dismissal of the complaint with prejudice.
Suppose you're right that the continuing education is a portion of the hearing officer's opinion is not moot, and that he adjudicated that on the merits. Were the attorney's fees apportioned on the basis of just that part of the hearing or part of the case?
Just the merits-based part of the case?
Right.
Is that the attorney's fees were apportioned simply by point in time. The court awarded fees for the point in time after DCPS had authorized the evaluation, so after the point in time at which the continuation of the litigation became unreasonable without foundation. But separate from that, I think the district court was within its discretion to award fees for the full amount. I mean, that's a discretion.
$1,100 or something? How much was it?
It was, right, $1,000.
In Strauss, I think you're right, there wasn't a request for compensatory education. There was a request for other relief, though. Right, there was a request for a declaration that the student had been denied a FAPE, that an IEP team be convened, and so on.
Yes, Your Honor.
So there was all of that. Fell by the wayside.
Right. But as I said, I mean, I think compensatory education is different. And Lezesny specifically holds that a claim for compensatory education forestalls mootness. So even if the other claims, which aren't even specified in particular in Strauss, weren't sufficient, the claim for compensatory education is sufficient here. And we also have the res judicata effect, as I mentioned. It's not just this particular evaluation, the psychological evaluation we've been talking about, but the complaint raised the claim for the appropriate triennial evaluation.
Yes, did you make that point in your brief, the distinction between the two evaluations?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where does that appear? And to focus on that.
I believe it was under the discussion of the res judicata effect of the decision. On page 35, continuing on to page 36 of our brief, says the parent can also not seek in any subsequent action any remedy she could have sought for DCPS's alleged failure to conduct a, quote, appropriate triennial evaluation, which was also raised in her complaint, though not actually pursued at the hearing. And then we argue that because the dismissal with prejudice protects the district, not just from the claim of compensatory education for the failure to conduct the psychological evaluation, but also for this appropriate triennial evaluation. Again, we have a claim that's raised in the complaint. The complaint is dismissed with prejudice. The district is thereby protected from any such claim in the future arising out of the same set of facts as in the complaint. And that res judicata effect, we believe clearly, makes the district a prevailing party, in addition to the fact that the hearing officer did, in fact, reach the merits.
Okay, thank you.
I believe I'm out of time, so if the court has no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman.
May I please the court again? Well, what you have noted is what the counsel for D.C. Alluded to. The provision that we are referring to, which is 1415 Roman numeral 13B1, that authorizes the attorney's fees, says they have to be a prevailing party, and then at the end of the day,
why were you litigating this after the district agreed to the initial claim? What was left of the case?
Well, Your Honor, just like he said, there was compensatory education that was remaining on the table. There was triennial, and then being able to go ahead and get something done. As been the practice of the District of Columbia, they have ignored students. Just as in this case,
you were litigating it to get a judgment about compensatory education.
which is an issue because they had no correct.
And you got that judgment, and the judge held that you had presented the burden was on you, and you presented no evidence, so therefore you lost on the merits. That, so in other words, even by your lights, the case was not moot.
Well, you know,
there's still aspects of it that were alive.
You know, it's not that they didn't lose on the merits because that the hearing officer had already delineated the opportunity for the appellant to be able to argue with, because he said, this is the only issue I'm dealing with. If there was compensatory education before him, like they argue, and that issue was not heard, it is not on the appellant to force the hearing officer to go ahead and hear it. And for the fact that it was still viable before him.
Wait a minute. You lost on the merits. Did you file for judicial? Now you're making an argument that the hearing officer was incorrect. Well, but did you seek judicial review of that judgment?
No, it was not sought. The appellant did not seek a judicial review. However, like I was trying to say, there's another prong to it. You have to continue the litigation without foundation. If we take what he's saying, that the issue about compared was viable, that means at the time he showed up at the hearing, there was a viable issue before the court. So he had the basis to be present.
Help me understand the process a little bit here. Can you litigate the compensatory education claim without having had the evaluations?
Yeah, it's possible because there were a series of violations that were listed. It wasn't just limited to the evaluation. There were other things that were supposed to be done, which was listed in the complaint that they were not done. So they were seeking compensatory education for the services that were not provided prior to the time the evaluation itself.
I thought your argument was that this was moot. Because nothing else could happen until the evaluations took place. None of the other claims made sense until the evaluations took place, and that the only thing before the hearing officer was whether the evaluation was going to occur. That's I guess I'm wrong then.
Well, not exactly, because there were several issues which were supposed to be litigated when it was limited to just that issue. That was what they faced and addressed.
So you're saying there's several issues in your complaint, but the hearing officer held that hearing just on that issue?
Just that, like you said, that there's only one issue, just the issue about those three evaluations. But the thing is, one of the issues was whether the evaluation was conducted within the time that the statute provided for, which is 3 years. It
really
was not
strange,
done.
Strange position you have. I mean, the more frivolous you're litigating after the district has basically caved in, the more unlikely that attorney's fees will be awarded against you. If you've been litigating and there's absolutely nothing at issue, then you win.
Well,
that's your position.
That if you're not at issue, yeah. If you're not at issue when you get there, you win. But the thing is that the child still does not get any benefit, because if they ordered it and nothing happened, nothing has happened for the child based on what was requested.
Thank you, counsel. I have one further question for Mr. Schifferle. Maybe I am misreading it, but I understood the footnote in your brief at page 40 to say that the failure to complete the triennial evaluations is itself moot.
The actual conduct of the evaluations, but again, there's a demand in the complaint for compensatory education for both, as we understand it, for both the failure to conduct the psychological evaluation recommended by the multidisciplinary team, as well as this failure to complete triennial evaluations. The parent's attorney didn't present any evidence to even clarify what the basis of this claim was, so it may well have been frivolous in its entirety. But just to the narrow extent that the triennial evaluation was not conducted, that aspect would be moot. But claim for compensatory education or other relief related to that would not be moot.
I'll think about that.
I'm sorry?
I'll have to think about that. I'm slicing it pretty thin here. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both. Case is submitted.